you know, things that you want to share, like the services you provide or like how to find you if people want to book an appointment or anything like that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, so our website is avaribeauty.com. You can book easily online with us. You can, there's like a texting feature on our website if you have any questions. We also have like product line, you know, for both consumers and professionals in our industry. So we sell the extensions, we sell the strip lashes. We're coming up with some new stuff, which I'm excited about, but still secret. And we're in the North Metro area, and we are a franchise too. So if anybody's interested in like opening up their own location, you should get in contact with me.
So AVARI?
Yep, AVARI and then beauty.com.
Avari Beauty. Oh my gosh. So I feel beautiful, more beautiful just hanging out. I totally need my eyebrows. Like, my eyebrows have never, I don't know. Let's not talk about them.
No, you have a nice shape to them.
There's a good shape, but there's they need some help. But I know one of our Oyate Leadership Network folk ladies had a winter salon, and I was like having a little FOMO. I was like, man, I kind of want to go there too. So
one by one. No. I've had a couple of them actually come in, which is really fun.
Awesome. Yeah. So if anyone out there is wanting to support a native owned business as well as get beautified, or what kind of services? So you said like eyelashes.
Yes. So we do lash extensions, lash lifts, lash tinting, we do microblading, we do brow lamination, facials, hydrofacial, chemical peels, microchanneling, which is like microneedling. So we do a variety of things. We're esthetician based, so we don't do hair. To clarify.
Okay. Yeah. Was I saying that hair?
I don't think you did, just in case. No hair.
Just in case, but there are lots of hair places. But yes. So skin, all things beauty. Mm-hmm. Carrie Meekwich, thank you so much for coming all the way down here, and I heart you.
I know, I heart you back. Kitchy Meekwich.
Kitchy Meekwich, thank you so much. I would love to have you back. Once you release your secret items, I would love to know what that's all about.
Sounds like a plan.
Gigawabaman, thank you. Gigawabaman. Listening to Medicine Bundle. Have a great weekend. Take care, stay safe.
You're listening to 90.3 KFAI FM, Minneapolis, St. Paul, online and archived at kfai.org.
The viewpoints expressed in this program are the opinions of the people expressing them and are not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors.
What's up? This is Toolman.
And this is Bear Witness.
And we are the Hallucination.
And you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake, Best Of.
The Halusa Nation.
It's a good day to be indigenous. Get up,
stand up. They are going to become more brutal.
Courtney Cuff, hit me cut again.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade. Hey, Kadagi, to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. Hey, we discuss local, national, Native news and events, and as you know, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues. Hey, we have our friend Rachel Dion Thunder, Indigenous Protectors Movement, giving us an update. And Rachel, thank you so much for coming on, and I want to just say a big peeny geegee, thank you so much for what you're doing. I was just at the powwow grounds, and I saw all the action happening. There was things happening at Little Earth, and you and your husband and the Indigenous Protectors Movement is definitely doing that. They're protecting us. So I just want to give you a big shout out here. Thank you so much for coming on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks for having me, Robert. And, you know, I know we don't have a whole lot of time here because I know that you have some other guests coming on, so I want to be quick and concise for everybody that is watching. So my name is Rachel. I'm VP and co-founder of the Indigenous Protector Movement, also second generation American Indian movement. And in response to Metro Surge and the occupation of Minneapolis by the United States federal government through the arm of ICE, we have been in full activation here in South Minneapolis. We're currently basing our hub of operations out of Powwow Grounds and All My Relations Gallery in collaboration like with the coffee shop and with Native American Community Development Institute. And really what we're doing here is a hub for donations, and the donations are specifically for our people on the front lines, our people that are doing patrols, people that are doing legal observer work as ICE is opportunistically abducting people every day off of our streets and now executing American citizens on our streets. And so the gear that we are asking for donations is like personal protective equipment. So like think like gas masks with like the full face cover, cold weather gear, hats, gloves, paintball gear, like protective equipment from paintball, kind of level stuff, like less lethal weapons, like rubber bullets, pepper balls, tear gas, hexachlorate, all of those things. And so I do want to put that shout out. We're running this every single day from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. And I did want to speak for a minute, Robert, on some things that are unfolding. You know, we're getting reports in that Bovino has been removed, that he is being terminated from his position, and that him, along with the 11,000 troops that were sent here from Louisiana, will be leaving tomorrow on Tuesday, which leaves the original deployment of Metro Surge troops. And so we want to look at, you know, look at the loss of life, look at the escalation of violence that has been perpetrated by ICE here on the streets of the Twin Cities. You know, and what that tells me, because we're looking at this like through the lens of like an authoritarian regime and how authoritarian regimes operate, and they operate under the basis of fear. That's their tactic to create the illusion of power, because in reality they don't have power. Just like how a bully operates. A bully is not a powerful person. A bully is somebody that is so unsure about themselves that the only way that they can exert any kind of form of power is through violence. And so that's what we're operating with here in Minneapolis. But the removal of Bovino, the removal of these troops, the propaganda that is being spun on a national narrative that, you know, that all of these people that are doing legal observer work, people that are recording with their phones, neighbors watching on Twitter, are domestic terrorists. they're the ones that are the terrorists. They're just state-sanctioned terrorists. They're the ones that murdered Renee. They're the ones that murdered Alex. They're the ones that are literally taking babies off of our streets here in Minneapolis. They're the ones that are hurting people and scaring people. And I want to speak directly to community here and say that we cannot allow them to win with fear. It's okay to be scared, because these are scary times, right? And we want to acknowledge that there is fear and that a lot of our community members are scared, but we can't let that fear drive our decisions. We have to continue to make decisions and take collective action out of kindness and out of love for each other, for our communities, and for our neighbors, because that is what's going to win this. And it's the people, it's the community members, it's the boots on the ground folks, it's the people doing the mutual aid, it's the people delivering food, it's the people that are standing guard outside of schools, the mothers, the fathers, the grandparents, that are winning this on the streets of Minnesota. And the Trump administration knows that. And so whenever you see them, because that's exactly what they do. you know, that there's been some very effective local community dispatch groups that were infiltrated by the right wing, and those and people that were active in those dispatches are being doxxed on X. That is another tactic and tool to disrupt, because those dispatches are so effective. They are so effective at community watch and community patrol and legal observer work that, of course, they're going to try to disrupt those. Of course, they're going to try to make us all doubt each other. You know, this is not anything new. The federal government has always done this. Anytime a movement has power, is they try to divide the people and get the people to second guess each other and to not trust each other when they're the ones that we should not be trusting. And so we need to, what these tactics that are being used to infiltrate these dispatch groups, take that as a sign that we are winning, that that is what we need to continue to keep doing. We need to continue to band together. We need to continue doing our patrols. We need to continue doing the legal observer work. We need to continue going to Know Your Rights trainings. Don't let them scare you into thinking that you shouldn't be doing those things, because it's going to take all of us to win this. And right now we are winning. Yep. So don't let them think, let you believe otherwise, because if we weren't winning, they wouldn't be doing these things.
Rachel, I know you're a very busy person. Can you give, we're all over the country here. Can you give how people can support you mentioned the powwow grounds and how people can send us I was there, and it was amazing to see people bringing food and things, but we need more because our community is under fire.
Right. So if you are local, you can donate supplies, gas cards, cash donations right here at powwow grounds on 14th and Franklin in South Minneapolis. If you are not local and you still want to contribute, we do accept donations on our website, indigenousprotectormovement.com. And if you go to the menu, there's a donate button there. And that goes straight to our org to help support, build capacity right here on the front lines in Minnesota. You know, and we're operating, I want to say, at 110% capacity. Everybody's spread pretty thin, but we're not going to let that stop us, because it's just a way of life. It's just what we do. That's a part of being American Indian Movement, is making the hard choice to get up every day and do the right thing, no matter how hard it is or how scary it is. You know, our late brother Hermas used to always say, strong hearts to the front. And now's the time for all of our strong hearts to come to the front, because people are literally dying on our streets.
Absolutely. Thank you, Big Peenigi. Thank you so much. Please take care of your spirit, your family, your husband, and your child. Thank you so much for coming on and doing what you're doing for our community.
Yeah. Of course. Thanks for having me on, Robert. Stay safe out there.
We'll talk to you soon. You too.
To our elders who teach us of our creation and our past, so we may preserve Mother Earth for ancestors yet to come, we are the land.
This is dedicated to our relatives before us thousands of years ago, and to the 150 million who were exterminated across the Western Hemisphere in the first 400 years' time, starting in 1492.
To those who have kept their homelands, and to the nations extinct due to mass slaughter, slavery, deportation, and disease unknown to them, and to the ones who are subjected to the same treatment today.
To the ones who survived the relocations and the ones who died along the way.
To those who carried on traditions and lived strong among their people.
To those who left their communities by force or by choice, and for generations no longer know who they are.
To those who search and never find, to those that turn away the so-called non-accepted, to those that bring us together, and to those living outside keeping touch, the voice for many.
To those that make it back to live and fight the struggles of their people, to those that give up and those who do not care, to those who abuse themselves and others, and those who revive again, to those who are physically, mentally or spiritually incapable by accident or by birth. To those who seek strength in our spirituality and ways of life, and those who exploit it, even our own. To those who fall for the lies and join the dividing lines that keep us fighting amongst each other.
To the outsiders who step in, good or bad, and those of us who don't know better. To the leaders and prisoners of war, politics, crime, race, and religion, innocent or guilty.
To the young, the old, the living, and the dead. To our brothers and sisters and all living things across Mother Earth, and her beauty we've destroyed and denied the honor that the Creator...
Hey, Carigido, all my friends and relatives in four directions. You are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. Hey, we discuss local, national, Native news and events. And as you know, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues. I'm so blessed to have our friend Robert Lilligren on, Native American Community Development Institute CEO, president. And, you know, you are down there on Franklin Avenue right now on Ground Zero. And I really appreciate you stopping and talking about what's happening. And thank you so much, as always, Robert, for coming on.
Yeah, bonjour, Robert. Thanks for having me. And I know you were down on Franklin Avenue today. So, yeah, it's quite an operation we have going on along the American Indian Culture Corridor. It's headquartered at Almay Relations Arts Gallery and Paulo Grounds Coffee Shop. And there's a spirit fire going in the parking lot all day long, people in and out. It's well organized.
Yeah, and it's, you know, I stopped there for a couple hours, stopped at the Indian Center, and but you're there, and people from Native American Community Development Institute are there, and all the other people are there every day, long hours, and I just want to give a big shout out and of appreciation for everyone that we know, including yourself, that's there all the time and holding down, you know, in a good way, in a really good way. And I just want to say a big peeny geegy thank you, Robert.
Yeah, thanks. Very kind. You're giving me way too much credit. It's not really me, but it's, as you said, it's a lot of our staff at NACD, Native American Community Development Institute. We have our canvassers, our organizers for Make Voting a Tradition. They've been detailed to a few different sites, but they're helping to keep things running to support the protectors. The Indigenous Protector Movement has really stepped into the center, and they're kind of leading the strategy along with the American Indian Movement. And then dozens and dozens, I'm sure it's in the hundreds by now, of community volunteers, folks coming in from the reservations, folks just stepping in from other communities, Native folks. And it's just, it really is encouraging. And there's so, I mean, it's really dire here. It's really difficult. And I think it's hard to understand if you're not really here what it's like. But we are under violent occupation by federal agents here, total disregard for the rule of law, for procedures. They're literally breaking down doors, breaking car windows, pulling people out of their cars. They're taking them and detaining them at the Bedote, which is the confluence of the Mississippi and Minnesota rivers, historically a very sacred site for the Dakota people, been desecrated a lot through colonization. It was the site of a concentration camp. So using this facility to detain people is triggering in a really deep way, and especially our Dakota brothers and sisters, you can just see it, right? And then they may detain, they're detaining people who are U.S. citizens, who were maybe acting as observers, legal observers. They're being detained, held down at Fort Snelling for some hours and then released. And they're being released without their wallets, no money, no identification, no phones, sometimes no coats. And it is cold here. Yeah. So all this organization in the communities, not just the Native community, but to meet these detainees as they're released, you know, keep them warm, arrange for transportation home. They don't have any way to get home. So it's just brutal. It's unreal.
Well, and like you said earlier, organization-wise, people working together has just been unbelievable. And, you know, I go down there and just talk to a few people and donate some money. And but I see things coming and going, meaning people are donating stuff, but also we're getting things out to the neighbors that need it and also the people that are on the front line. And with that in mind, Robert, I'm wondering if we could talk about how people that are listening to this show across the nation, how they can support. And I know people have been asking.
Yeah, thanks for asking. And, you know, we've organized as a community. All communities are, but in the Native community, you know, we prioritize our Native relatives and our non-Native neighbors. And I want to be really clear about that, that we are inclusive in our support. And our building, where All My Relations Arts Gallery Powell Grounds is dedicated to supporting the efforts of the protectors, right? But people at such a high profile building, our little yellow building on the American Indian Cultural Corridor, so people bring donations there, and then as quickly as we can, we try to get them to the appropriate destination. And then one of the things we're very fortunate to have here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis, St. Paul, is the Metropolitan Urban Indian Directors, MUID, MUD, we call it. And so that's over three dozen or about three dozen Native organizations from across the Twin Cities. And so we've come together through under the umbrella of Metropolitan Urban Indian Directors and started to organize ways of managing these donations. These donations can become kind of burdensome, and we've learned in past crises we need to be orderly about how we're receiving them. So we have a few different MUD members, the Division of Indian Works on East Lake Street, the Minnesota Chippewa Tribes building on Franklin Avenue, and there's a site in St. Paul that escapes me right now. But so donations are welcome, but financial contributions are as well. And you know, we're very organized. We express our Indigenous value of caring for our relatives and for our neighbors, but we don't have a lot of resources. We're just good at doing a lot with a little. And so if folks are the best place, if you're on social media, if you're on Facebook, I would look for the MUD community page. It's MUID community page. And that keeps updated on what all the MUD membership orgs are doing, very specifically about donations that are needed. Also specifically about how you can financially contribute as well. That's where I would go. That's kind of the catch-all spot. So on Facebook, and it's called the MUD, M-U-I-D, community page. I have it up right now, as a matter of fact. So, yeah, and people have just responded incredibly. And, you know, there's, I'm an optimist. I think you know that, Robert. And so yeah. I believe, I know, there'll be a day after all of this, right? And, and there's so much energy and positivity, really, coming out of our crisis response. And so for me, trying to look into the future, it's like, what can we embrace and kind of amplify once all this is done? And there's things like the incredible way the Next Generation leadership has stepped in. I mean, it's just, it's a beautiful thing to see. So oldies like me, you know, can do the other things that I'm good at, you know, as these younger leaders step in. Another is the level of tribal involvement here in the urban Indian community, which is unprecedented, not just Minnesota tribes from across the country. Navajo Nation was here, and they're trying to better look after their citizens and get IDs into people's hands, a big movement toward that. And another thing is the collaboration across affected communities, right? And we're always supporting and building relationships with our Latino neighbors, our East African Somali neighbors, but this is giving us something to really do together. And so I look forward to figuring out how we sustain those kind of collaborative relationships going forward.
Yeah, I remember, and we got less than a minute here, I remember during COVID, my nation, Ho-Chunk Nation, was vaccinating everybody that they could. You didn't have to be Native because they wanted the community safe. And that's, you know, that's what we're doing here in Minneapolis, St. Paul, and is keeping everybody safe. And it doesn't matter who you are. Hey, right on. Hey, we're here with Robert Lilligren, Native American Community Development Institute, and a White Earth Ojibwe citizen. We'll be right back after this short break. Please stay with us. Oh.
Programming on KFAI is supported by Quit Partner. Quitting smoking or vaping is easier said than done. Quit Partner offers Minnesotans no-cost resources to quit nicotine, including patches, gum and lozenges, coaching, and digital support. More at quitpartnermn.com.
I'm Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan, and I want to be your next United States Senator, and you are listening to Native Roots Radio.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Hey, welcome back, everyone. Hey, we are here with Robert Lilligren, CEO and President of Native American Community Development Institute here in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis. And I only got you for one more segment here, and there's so much to talk about. But it's part of, I think, what you were saying, too, a little bit earlier, you know, the way all these people, our young ones, are stepping up, organizations are stepping up. It's too early to celebrate. But it is a kind of a thing to celebrate, to see how well that's going going on in the community. And again, stopping down at the powwow grounds and seeing how everyone's engaged. There's media from across the world there interviewing everybody. It's just amazing.
Yeah, it is. And we're getting a lot of attention, and we're trying to, you know, keep people safe. And we do have international media. We've had people, reporters from England, France, Germany, Italy, Japan. I'm sure there's others. And so one of the roles that the NACD communication staff is doing is helping to sort of triage this and sort of act as a curator a little, or so people aren't just getting jumped on by reporters. A lot of local media, community level media, rural media. And it's a lot, right? It's a lot to kind of deal with. And reporters are showing up. I will say, as a group, they've been incredibly respectful, ask what they can and can't film, and engage with people in a very respectful way. But we're trying to manage that and prioritize these media contacts, and hopefully, again, make them, hopefully leverage them into strategy to advancing our causes and get people on unified message. Or I'll say our community is doing very, very well, and that we have a lot of attention here. And you know, I think overall that's good. It can be a little dangerous, but also we need to get our story out there, right? We're still here, we're still doing it. And yeah, I think it's been pretty positive overall. And I'm trying to kind of seize this moment. And the other thing, and this is kind of a half-baked thought from me, and I want to present it that way. Mm-hmm. But one of the things, we brought up COVID, and of course, during that, George Floyd was murdered here.
Yeah.
And there was a massive community response that turned violent very quickly. And as we know now, a lot of the violence was perpetuated by outside agitators who wanted it to turn violence. And it's very tense here, and it wouldn't take much to blow this whole thing up, right, and turn the response violent, which would be catastrophic for our relatives, for the city of Minneapolis, the state, and democracy overall. And how it's remained as peaceful as it is just really amazing and impressive. There's a lot of clergy that are deploying all over the place where there's demonstrations or gatherings. We had a huge march, and depending on last Friday during the general strike, and depending on whose numbers you want to read, it was somewhere between 75 and 150,000 people marching to the streets of Minneapolis in 20 below zero weather, 40 below wind chills. And we're very hardy people, and we're serious about what's happening here. It's grim, but we're determined. And we're determined to keep this peaceful. So here's my half-baked idea, and I've got to give it some more thought. But just comparing where we were at this point after George Floyd was murdered, and comparing where we are, that was violent and out of control. Comparing where we are now, people are passionate but peaceful. And I just have a hunch that at the kernel of some of this peaceful response is indigenous, right? We're kind of at the core of this. We're determined to remain peaceful and prayerful throughout this, to walk with our neighbors. And so as I'm kind of just thinking this through, I think that there's the fact that indigenous voices are being heard and are being centered in a lot of what's happening in the response. I think we're contributing in a very important way.
Well, there's a couple things that I've brought up, and one of them, there's going to be a memorial for both at both sites, and I see on social media that the jingle dress dancers are going to be really out there in full force. But one of the things, you know, we talk about, and we're the resistance experts. I've been saying this almost every show, you know, and it's a meme, of course. I didn't come up with it. I'm not that smart. But the rage you feel right now is what Native American Indians people have felt for decades. Welcome to the front lines. And I guess when I say that, I'm very proud of Minnesota, too.
Yeah, I know. I've seen that meme as well, and I agree with it. And that's, you know, right now, like, we're in front of a lot of non-Native media, a lot of non-Native groups are engaging some of us to understand more what's going on. I lead with that, not that quote necessarily, but this idea that for Indigenous people to be under attack, by violent attack by the federal government, that's a tale as old as time here on Turtle Island, right? This is something we're very accustomed to. And like you said earlier, it kind of triggers this trauma that we carry very near the surface, but it's not unfamiliar. And so for a lot of communities, I think this is a new dynamic and a new feeling. But again, that kind of puts the Native and Indigenous perspective and voice in the forefront.
Yeah, well said, better said than I said. I there was two things that happened a couple of days ago. Well, there's more than two, but I just want to mention these because you're pretty much our political guru here in Minnesota when you come on. And we want to give a shout out to Shelley Buck, but also that other election that happened on the same day, what a landslide in a kind of a purplish area. It was like 3,000 votes to 200. I mean, is that an indication of what's ahead? I hope.
Fingers crossed, fingers and toes, right? And so there were two, you're talking about the special house elections, right?
Yes, thank you.
One of our Dakota sisters, Sally Buck, got elected in her East Metro district, and in the other district you're talking about as well, a Democrat. It was a special election to replace a Democrat, so it's not the biggest surprise. But the number I am really impressed with is in those two special elections on Tuesday, Democrats won by 97%. It's either 97.5 or 95.7% in those two districts. So that goes to your point, you know. And does this feel like the start of, you know, or the continuation of a blue wave? Maybe. I like to think so. But more and more, all of the kind of polling that we're seeing around, especially around this ICE involvement, people don't like it. And I think especially here, the two people that were shot dead, murdered by federal agents, were white people. 37 years old, respectful. And I think the rest of the world looks at that, or at least here in Minnesota, and they see if that could happen to them, it can happen to me, right? There isn't that separation of, well, that was a Native person, or that was a person of color, that was a Black person. You know, I think it's very, people can relate to what happened to these victims. They were nonviolent observers exercising their First Amendment right to be there, and they were murdered.
It's weird, Robert. We're roughly the same age, and I was young during this time, but I can't think of anything other than maybe, you know, how history repeats itself, and that's why we have to really get back in the schools and teach the real history. But all I have to say is two words: Kent State. I mean, this is totally bizarre.
It's totally bizarre, and, you know, it's a different set of circumstances, right? But those were peaceful protesters that were gunned down by federal law enforcement. And so there's a, I felt that same kind of connection, again, being an elder, you know, now, and we were around during the Kent State massacre. And so Mm-hmm. And I mean, name your massacre, right? Whether it's Mudanini or what. So it's a familiar, historical echo.
Yeah. Well, we only got like a minute and a half, and I really want to get out there again because people ask how, again, we can support what's happening on Franklin Avenue and all the city of Minneapolis and the state of Minnesota with through the Powwow Grounds and Mud, if you wouldn't mind doing that one more time.
Yeah. And so the best place, and there's a number of places. I mean, you could just start Googling, you know. But on the Metropolitan Urban Indian Directors Community Facebook page, so it's MUID, Metropolitan Urban Indian Directors Community Facebook page, that says real-time sort of updates about what supplies are needed, where you can contribute cash. I would recommend there's the Powwow Grounds, you can donate through there, the Indigenous Protector Movement, IPM, Indigenous Protector Movement, they're one of the local nonprofits that I really lift up and hope people can direct resources toward is the Minnesota Indian Women's Resource Center. Mm. Minnesota Indian Women's Resource Center, MIWRC. They are opening their building to keep our unsheltered relatives from freezing to death and keeping people warm and fed. And I just want to be really clear. This is all going on while ICE is just running wild in our community here. So there's a lot of risk going on. But if you go to the MUD, M-U-I-D, community page on Facebook, that's probably as good a resource as any.
Well, Robert, I want to just say a big peeny geegy thank you, as always, for stopping in our weekly chat. It's great to hear from you and great to be able to talk about things that are happening. And just a quick thing, there's only a few seconds left. I just have to say this, and you can give a thumbs up or scream along with me, but saw some latest polling, and our friend Peggy Flanagan is looking pretty good right now, but she needs our support.
Right, our whiter sister gubernatorial candidate. I'm sorry, senatorial candidate here in Minnesota.
Right on. Right on. Thank you again, Robert.
You go ahead. Gigalabamin.
Listening to Native Roots Radio. I'm Bobby Wilson. Wicha.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade. Hey, welcome back, everyone. This is Native Roots Radio, and really excited to have these two guests on. Nibby, why don't you introduce yourself and introduce our great senator here, state senator, and then let's get going on this.
Yes, good evening. I'm so happy to be here. Nibi Ogichida Ikwe, Water Warrior Woman, tribal member of Bad River Band of Lake Superior Ojibwe. And I'm here with Senator Susan Paugh, who is a wonderful friend of mine, and we've been working together on the Sustainable Foraging Task Force. So I'm so happy that she was able to take time from her busy schedule to come and hang out with us for a little while, and we can talk about foraging.
Yeah, definitely. Welcome, Senator. Really great to have you on. And tell our listening audience, because we're all over the country and we're on many stations, and where you're located and where you're the state senator of in your district.
Well, thank you so much. First, thank you, Robert, for having me on this show. I'm excited to be here. So I'm the senator that represents Senate District 38, which is actually the most diverse Senate district in the entire state of Minnesota. And that encompasses the cities of Brooklyn Park, Brooklyn Center, and Osseo.
Awesome. Well, let's talk about this, because this has been a really important, Nibby, this has really been important, and let's get down to brass tacks. What's the issue here, and let our audience know, And then we can talk to the senator a little bit about how she's really stepping up for us in a good way. So Nibby, let's talk just a little bit about the what's happening here in Minnesota, good and bad.
So there's obviously a lot going on in Minnesota. One of the things that we're working on behind the scenes has been able to connect our people back to the land and water and the plants in a healthy way so that we are connected in the way that the Creator had intended us to be. And when I say that, I really want that for everybody across all of Minnesota, because there's so many beautiful plants and medicines that are out there on the public land that are available for us to be healthy and to live a lifestyle that was more connected the way that our ancestors lived. You know, we all knew our plants, we all knew our medicines, we all knew how to go and make our tea when we needed it. And so that's what I feel like I have brought to the task force, is reminding us that traditional ecological knowledge is so important, because that is what sustainability is actually based on. That is the foundation of traditional ecological knowledge, is having that connection where we know to how to take care of the land and water in a way that it will then take care of us. So I'm so grateful to be a part of this task force as a representative of Minnesota Indian Affairs Council. And I feel like I learned a lot from the task force as well. There's a diverse group of people that have come together. And, you know, there were things that we disagreed on, but there were also many things that we got along together really great on. So I think that it's important that I can highlight the fact that there was a lot of good collaboration, wonderful words brought to the table by many different groups. Senator Susan Paugh was probably one of my favorite ones. I found out that we had a lot in common and that our backgrounds are very similar in how we care for the land and water. So, you know, I'm just grateful. It's been a long journey to get where we are today. And to be honest, it was actually going on a lot longer before I was actually asked to join the task force. So I was wondering if, Senator, you would like to give some background on the legislative story of, you know, how we got to where we are.
Yeah. So actually, I have been a forager my whole life and have always found that our state laws were very restrictive. And then our DNR website didn't give a lot of information about what was the guidance for foraging. And so a group of community members who were concerned brought this the idea of a task force being created to evaluate our current foraging laws, and to possibly put something in statute or new law that would be recommendations on how we can make sure that foraging is protected as a recreational activity or as an activity that can be done here in the state of Minnesota. At that time, the DNR, prior to them coming to me, the DNR was actively seeking to put in rulemaking that would restrict foraging. And would also, to some limits, I should say, not restricted totally, but to some limits, and put limits on how much you can forage. And that was a concern from the public.
Wow. That's, you know, we talk about our medicines, and Nibby was mentioning that too, and how important that is. And I was taught a long time ago that anything with a square trunk, you know, was a medicine. And mm-hmm. I see those everywhere. Senator, are you Hmong?
I am.
So I used to teach at Harding High School, and I just love how our cultures are so similar. And I know you guys have clans. I mean, they're so similar in talking about foraging, and I know we pray over your kill when you go hunting, and all those things that are very similar. So it's great to have an ally that knows what we're talking about.
Robert, it's funny that you bring that up. That was something that I actually said to Nibi too, as she and I did this work together. And I really got the chance to know Nibi and learned a lot, actually. And one of the things I found out is how similar our backgrounds and our culture mm-hmm. traditions really are. That is so true that, you know, in our history has always been in our tradition that before we take from the land, that we ask it for permission. And not only that, but we're grateful for what we're able to get from the land, whether we're foraging or hunting. And much of our medicines come from the forest, from the jungles where we lived back in Laos.
Yeah, that's amazing, Nibi. I didn't know that until I taught a high school in St. Paul and Harding specifically. We have such a great Hmong population there. And I just retired, 5 years ago or 4 years ago? But it blew my mind because when I started working there, that school didn't have Hmong students, and the students are really, really, really active as they should be because they're a high percentage. Nibi, that's just amazing, isn't it? That, you know, it's like the medicine wheel. We're all related.
Yeah, so beautiful. You know, I thought that, like, going into the task force, I knew there was going to be differences from different agencies and different perspectives, but I really found it powerful in the way that we were able to work so well together on most items. And I thought that it was so beautiful in the way that we were able to respectfully give our opinions, our input, our expertise in the different things that we're there to speak about. And I thought that it was wonderful that Senator Pa was able to very kindly take everybody's thought processes and try to put it together in a way that I think was, you know, the best we could and the best for all of us. I think it's most important that as we do this work, traditional ecological knowledge remains the center of what we do. Mm-hmm. All these recommendations that are coming forward, really, the only way for success is to be sustainable in foraging. And I keep reminding the task force, I think I say it through every meeting, that that's exactly what traditional ecological knowledge is. It's literally the wisdom from the creator to utilize the gifts that are provided for all of us. So, you know, I take that as a blessing that we were able to incorporate that traditional ecological knowledge into some of these recommendations. I think my favorite one was the fact that the task force recommends the use of plain language to provide clear and accessible information that makes it easier for the public to understand statutes, rules, and traditional ecological knowledge related to foraging on DNR-managed state lands and waters.
Wow,
that's beautiful. That is a huge step forward for us, especially working with the DNR.
That's beautiful and right. State Senator, where are we at with this, and how can we support what you're doing at the Capitol? And I love going up to the Capitol. I go up there all the time, and sometimes to raise heck, but also other times to really support our lawmakers.
I love that. I want you to, next time you're up there, or even if you just purposely come to visit, please come and visit me and feel free to raise heck or hell anytime. So going forward, we have finished the work of the task force recommendations. It does not mean the work is done, though. We take the recommendations from the task force and then we put it into a legislative bill that will be going before the legislature and before the Committee on Natural Resources to take a look at and to vote on. It has to pass the House. It has to pass the Senate. Then the governor has to sign it before it becomes law. But there's still a lot more work to be done. From the time that we finish our work as a task force, we still have to engage with many stakeholders, including our tribal nations and mm-hmm. tribal members, before we even get to the point of passing a law. But it's good that we've got this. We've got the recommendations. We've got a report that we can start showing people to say, hey, this is where we landed. Now, what do you guys think? and start to get that feedback and that input. It's hard to get that input when people don't have something to reflect on or to give feedback on. So we're hoping that we can start that right away.
Yeah, totally understanding. And this is great information. And and again, you know, sometimes our education does not really widen the horizon to people about our medicines and about who we are. And so this is just great to be able to talk about and promote this and educate a lot of people out there and educate our allies, because when I was young, I didn't know much of this. Hey, we have to take a break, but can you guys hold on? And I want to just not only talk about this, how we can support you, but also talk about how are you guys doing with what's going on here in the state? And I'd really like to get your input on that, State Senator and Nibby. That would be great to talk about. And then we can get back into it. But hey, this is Native Roots Radio. I'm excited to have you on, and we'll be right back after this short break.
Support for KFAI comes from First Avenue, presenting I Love Lucy, Kiss the Tigers tribute to Lucinda Williams, Saturday, February 14th at the Turf Club. Minneapolis rockers Kiss the Tiger are back for their annual Valentine's Day tribute to the music of Lucinda Williams. They bring their punk-infused style to the alt-country songs of Lucinda Williams. Opening the show are Molly Mayer and her Disbelievers. More information about I Love Lucy, Kiss the Tiger pays tribute to Lucinda Williams at the Turf Club is available at first-avenue.com.
Programming on KFAI is supported by Quit Partner. Quitting smoking or vaping is easier said than done. Quit Partner offers Minnesotans no-cost resources to quit nicotine, including patches, gum and lozenges, coaching, and digital support. More at quitpartnermn.com.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Hey, we are here with Nibby and State Senator Susan Paugh, and really excited to have you on and talk about foraging. You know, we've been talking so much about what's happening here in the state of Minnesota, and I just want to touch base on that and recognize that, too. State Senator, how are you and your constituents holding up with what's going on here nationally? Or locally, I mean.
As I am sure that you know, and many of your listeners too know, that there has been an immense amount of ice activity here in the state of Minnesota, and specifically in the metro area. Not just Minneapolis and St. Paul, but even the suburbs, first ring and second ring suburbs, and throughout the state of Minnesota. My district being one that's very diverse, and actually I believe almost 20% of my residents, I have to give you the numbers later, but almost 20% of my residents are foreign born. So that means they're not born here in the United States. We have ice on our streets, in our shopping areas, in the parking lots of businesses, around our schools, around our government buildings. They're everywhere in our cities. And that is what's scaring people. They're afraid to go out of their home, because ICE is targeting them while they're driving. And not just because they're looking for them, they're looking for someone who looks a certain way. Mm-hmm. They have definitely they're profiling people based on what they look like. And so we know that. So a lot of my residents are living in fear. And as we can see on the news, ICE is using excessive force against our people. So that's something that's very, very scary right now. And it's, I feel like we're in crisis. We're moving from one crisis to another. It feels that way for me every day.
Well, and also too, like you just mentioned right there, this year has been terrible with the school shooting, with Hortman and her husband and her dog being assassinated in the shootings. Absolutely. This has been unbelievable.
year, and the year seems like 10 years. And Nibby, how are you holding up and your family with what's going on around here? It's just got to be a dark cloud over everybody here that's sane or BIPOC people.
Yeah, it's pretty scary. I know a lot of activities have been canceled, so it's affecting our children and our communities in a way that is really sad. My son, he was accepted into this high honors music program in Minneapolis. It was going to be at the convention center, and it got canceled. You know, and they're hoping at some point that they can reschedule. But at this point, you know, it's a lot of kids being let down because they have all these activities that they were intending to be a part of. And then it's sad, too, because many students are now choosing to stay home.
Mm-hmm.
Schools had talked about the attendance is very low. And so that makes me kind of sad, too, that, you know, kids are afraid. And I just think kids shouldn't have to worry about that kind of stuff. And then I guess I've just been trying to help out where I can, you know, giving people rides where I can and donating some resources here and there. I myself have been a little bit scared too, because I typically use my tribal ID as my main form of identification. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I keep thinking about that. Like, I don't understand why we have to worry about all this crazy stuff. It's not the way that it's supposed to be. So I guess in the back of my mind, that's why I try to focus on the good, trying to find a way for all of us to get connected back to the land, the water, the plants, in a way that, you know, is more healthy and productive and positive for all of us. So I'm just trying to keep the focus on the good.
That's a really good point, and I'm glad that's why we're talking about foraging now, State Senator. Back to that, I guess, you know, how can people support you and support this action? And I know it's going to be a little different at the Capitol now. I don't know if they're going to, if it's going to be having to go through a gun detector or whatever, but still it's a very welcoming place for people out there to come visit you or visit who, and you love having your constituents come by.
Yeah. You know, in the past, as legislators, we've always kind of had some concern about the Capitol allowing guns inside, but also not having any way to check if people have guns, if they have even a permit to carry, or if they're, or anything. I mean, there really was no checkpoint whatsoever. And if you've ever been in one of our Senate chambers, we're all kind of below, and people can come up to the gallery of the chamber and sit up in the gallery and watch us have floor sessions on the bottom. Mm-hmm. But someone can, the people that are sitting up there can have guns on them.
Yeah.
And the scary thing is that we're sitting ducks there on that chamber. We're all sitting there just, you know, doing our business. But this was always a concern, but it wasn't so much so as when Melissa Hortman and her husband Mark got killed.
Yeah.
Then it was like, oh my gosh, should we really be where we still want the public to be able to observe our Senate hearings and session, but they're at a much elevated state in which no one's being checked to see if they have weapons or guns on them. And so that's really kind of a dangerous and scary place. You know, I don't know if you know this, Robert, but besides, you know, the Hortmans and the Hoffmans, many of us, there was well over 50 legislators that were named on this hit list by Vance Bolter. And my name was one of them on there. And I was one of the closest legislators that lived by both of Hoffman and Hortman. And he was going, we could tell he was going geographic areas, because it just makes sense, right?
Wow.
It's easier and faster to get there. And this ordeal has just been truly scary. And since this has happened, I've had to move my entire family from a home we had been in for over 16 years.
Oh my gosh, that's crazy. Well, I have State Senator Mary Kunish on every Friday, and we do know that, but I did not know that you live that close to it. Mm-hmm. I used to be a legislator for my tribe, a Ho-Chunk tribe in Wisconsin, and I was in Washington many times, and let me tell you, there is so much things you have to go through in order to get into the, into the area to see where bills and people are. That's got to change.
You are listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI 90.3 FM, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and around the world at kfai.org, non-commercial community-powered radio.
Oh, it's bursting with ultrasonic.
Gin and tonic, please.
Oh, it's bursting with ultrasonic.
Gin and tonic.
Oh, it's bursting.